Okay, everybody, can we get started again? This is Gina. For the record, I haven't said that for a while. Can everybody pull out their small table of agreements one more time? Small team table of the small team agreements, and go to recommendation 13 on page 7. So what we're going to do here, we want to ask everyone to please look at recommendation 13. A small team did make some modifications to this based on the public comments and based on the feedback received in the small team. I think primarily to get to some language on appropriate processing. However, since then you have received the ICANN memo, and we have John here to help us understand that. And so what we were going to propose as our process is just invite everybody to look at this for a couple minutes to anchor yourself and remind yourself about the small team. Then we were going to go to John to discuss the memo or, like, present some ideas of the memo and then have a discussion. And then we would go back to recommendation 13 to understand, is there something we need to change or further modify based on our understanding through the memo?
Oh, yeah, so I'd like to welcome John Jeffrey to our team. So we have a couple options before us. John's made arrangements, so we have a Jones Day attorney from Germany on the phone that can give us a brief synopsis of the memo and describe it, or we could, and then we could ask questions, or we could just ask questions about the memo itself. So it's up to you guys, but let's just have a show of hands about who would like to get a briefing from the council. So Benedict's raising his hand and not knowing what he's raising his hand to. Anybody on this end of the table?
They raised their hands.
Okay.
So let's take the synopsis.
So, yep.
So thank you for listening to us. So I'm John Jeffrey. We have Undina von Diemer, who I'm sure I just destroyed her name. Dr. von Undina is on the phone. She is Jones Day's lead partner on European privacy and cybersecurity and coordinates their practice in Europe. She was helping us, her and her team helped us with this memo. So we thought better than having my lack of expertise on present it to you, we'd have her present it to you. Undina, can you hear us?
I can hear you very well. Thank you, John.
Thank you for inviting me to that meeting.
Please go ahead if you can.
I think that we're thinking just a quick summary.
There is less than five minutes.
A lot of echo. Sorry.
Okay, so, let's get started. John, what is really a little bit disturbing is I hear a lot of echo. Can we change something? I don't know what is causing the echo, but do you hear me? Okay, so I try to speak nevertheless, but hearing the echo is a little bit weird. But anyway, maybe let's start with a brief preliminary remark. The question whether ICANN and the contracted parties are to be considered joint or independent controllers is of course not an easy question, and it cannot maybe easily be answered. And it might also well be the case that European data protection authorities might have different views on that topic, and maybe eventually we will even have the board opine on that. So what we tried here in ICANN's response is though to lay out some grounds for what we think is a reasonable and defensible position in this regard, and that is what we think is independent controllership with respect to GTLD registration data processing. Of course, we looked very thoroughly on the initial report, and we understood from the position of in the initial report of the EPDP team that basically the team considers domain registration as one set of operations and assessed that ICANN and the registries and the registrars are all jointly contributing to that operation and therefore are to be regarded as joint controllers. We think it might also be possible to hold a different view in this regard. And I guess the main reason that we think can be brought for independent controllership is probably that the processing is from our perspective not just one set of domain registration operations. We think that it actually consists of various processing activities so that you can break down domain registration processing into different processing activities which occur under a common framework of agreements or policies, but still the parties have distinct purposes here. And I guess one important point in this regard is that when we look further at what is a joint purpose, that a joint purpose between ICANN and the contracted parties as controllers cannot just be determined by a policy that is accepted by everybody, but we think that there is a factual analysis needed on whether the controllers really jointly determine the specific purpose for the specific processing activity. So just because we have a policy that is accepted by everybody, we don't think that this results in a joint purpose. We also think that just because certain processing purposes might originate from ICANN, and ICANN may articulate a purpose for the contracted parties, that this would also not make ICANN a joint controller in this regard, because again, if articulating a purpose or setting certain standards for processing or detailing and defining processing protocols further would make an entity already a controller, I guess that would mean that if one would really follow this argument, that many standard-setting bodies would actually have to be considered as controllers, and that cannot be the case. We also think that while the initial report speaks about relatively broadly ICANN purposes, when you take a closer look at the purposes that were all summarized under ICANN purposes, that it could be that at least with regard to some of these purposes, the parties actually pursue different purposes. And it seemed to us that, for example, when we look at conducting audits or inspections, that this is or transitioning data from one registrar to another, that these seem to be cases where the parties actually have different purposes that they are pursuing. Another reason that made us think that independent controllership might be rather suitable in the situation is that it is not just about determining a joint purpose. It's also about determining the means of the processing jointly, and this is really about determining the technical and organizational measures of the processing, and we didn't really see that on an abstract level of policy, maybe, but not on an actual level of I can determining the means of the processing for the contracted parties, and therefore there's this factual element of control missing that is really needed to become a controller in the first place. And of course, this also results in then not being able to become a joint controller for certain processing activities. Maybe also looking at this from a more strategic angle, it seemed to us that independent controllership actually has some advantages over joint controllership. And obviously, joint controllership requires to enter into an arrangement between the joint controllers, as the GDPR prescribes, and it would result in joint and several liabilities between ICANN and the contracted parties, which I think would probably also result in some difficult-to-handle liability risk. At the same time, in order to control these risks, it might be the case that really some very costly oversight and audit mechanisms would need to be put in place, so it would really change the structure of ICANN and the contracted parties working together at this point. So taking all this into consideration, we thought one feasible or possible way forward would be to, if one follows the idea of independent controllership, to maybe develop a data protection specification further that would become part of each contract with the contracted party. And coming back to the temporary specification and Appendix C, that is already a starting point for setting out the obligations that have to be met by a controller under the GDPR. One could probably, on that basis, define such specification further. So that would be maybe a way forward. Looking into the future, another idea that we had and it could be interesting to discuss would be whether this refined, so to speak, Appendix C of the temporary specification could be eventually used as a basis of a code of conduct. That's something that the GDPR foresees. And that would probably maybe even provide for some greater legal certainty for ICANN and the contracted parties, because in order to have a code of conduct, that the code would require authority approval and at the same time also oversight by accredited bodies. So that's, but of course this is something for the future. In the near term, we thought that coming back to Appendix C of the temporary specification and developing that further to provide for a suitable framework could be a possible and maybe preferred way forward. So this was a little summary of what we set out in the response memo.
Thank you. This is Gina Bartlett. I'm serving as the facilitator right now, and I think we're going to open it up for questions. So I saw James, Alan, Emily, and I see Thomas. And then, John, are you going to field the questions and then defer what's necessary, or how are we going to handle the questions?
Well, let's see what the questions are.
Okay. James?
So I guess just wanted to flag something, and maybe it turns into a question for John or for whomever. But our agreements have provisions that kick in whenever the registrar stakeholder group adopts anything that is called a code of conduct. And I understand that's a term of art under GDPR, and I think we use it differently under our registrar accreditation agreement. So there's a collision there. So we would have to fix that either by calling it something else or by taking out or amending or making clear that that doesn't trigger that provision in our contract. Thanks.
Excellent point.
Thanks, James. Alan?
Thank you, Alan Woods, for the record. I suppose a two-point question. This is a very difficult process for any legal counsel to answer the question about the controllership, et cetera. So, I mean, I would be very intrigued as to understand what was the task that was set for the outside counsel in coming to this memorandum. And as an aside to that, then, if we have come to a decision or if a decision has been come to as to the respective roles of the parties, it would be very helpful for the EPDP to be able to see the data mapping process that based the decision as to the roles of the parties, because that could lead to us being able to see how the processes were mapped and where the conclusions as to controllership or this independent controllership arose from and could help us in our deliberations, definitely. So if that is available, I would love to see it.
Why don't I start with an answer and then we can open it up to others. I think you're absolutely right. I think this is an almost impossible question without the data mapping, and it's my view that there's still work to be done on that. That, in fact, we would benefit from having discussions with the contractor parties and making sure that that map is clear, and that could lead to a different conclusion in terms of whether it's independent or joint, and the factors of that could impact it. So I think there's definitely still something that needs to be done. I think it's been one of my concerns when this discussion's come up in previous groups. When I was in Thomas's group and was talking about it, that was our primary concern, that we were putting one thing in front of the other, and in fact they either have to go parallel or the mapping has to be a little bit ahead to make a decision. I don't know if anybody on the phone from the legal team would want to add to that, because I don't think I answered the whole question.
I think part one was what was the task for the legal counsel? Or the independent counsel?
Yeah, Dan, do you want to answer that? Can you speak?
Yes, so this is Dan. I'm not sure I answered that question exactly, but this was the memo we presented as an ICANN org memo responding to requests for additional input from, it started out as the small team that Thomas Rickert and Diane and others were on, and you, Alan, I guess. We presented an initial memo, at first responding to a memo put forward that laid out the case that ICANN and the contracted parties were sort of joint controllers across the board, and we raised first in a 10-page memo some questions about that, and then we were asked for additional input, and so we provided this additional paper kind of laying out in further detail the case that might be made for why we could be seen as independent controllers, and as John said, we're not the world's experts on this, but we do have great outside counsel helping. I mean, they helped in this, but I wouldn't go into this is an ICANN org memo, and we're not going to be disclosing communications between ICANN and Council, if that's what you're asking for. Thanks.
Dan, just so you know, in the future, it's very difficult to understand you. Your mic is very gravelly, and we caught most of what you said, but if there's any improvements you can do, that would be great. Alan's requested a brief follow-up. He promises it's brief, and then I'll go back to I have Emily, Thomas, Diane. Go.
Thank you, Alan Woods, again, for the record. I just wanted to ask a brief follow-up and asking whether or not, and I think this is the core of the question, whether or not specifically the outside counsel were asked for an alternative to the joint controller arrangement or not, and that's kind of a very key question for us to ask.
I think they were asked to analyze the legal issues, not to specifically to go in one direction or another.
Thank you. Emily?
Thank you. Thanks a lot for preparing the memo, getting the work done. On a practical level, it arrived after many people had left to make their journey to this meeting, and we've been working intensively ever since. So responses at this stage, certainly from my perspective, pretty rough and ready. It's obviously a very complex area. It's engaged us as a team for many months, the issue of what the purposes are and who's the controller and processor, and it's clear to me that it's an issue on which sensible minds can disagree, particularly if they have an interest in disagreeing. But anyway, as a sort of just a straight analysis, I think one of the confusing issues is that there's quite a small set of data which is used by many parties for many purposes. Where I think this is my personal view at this stage, where it gets complex and legally risky is the disclosure and publication of data, which from the point of view of a registrar would not really be something that would flow from the normal course of their activities and the normal processes around registering a domain name. I have quite a few questions and comments on the memo. I don't want to take up everybody's time with it because I think this is and just looking at around the room, this is an issue that engages the contracted parties very much. I think that there's also some interest from our colleagues from business and IP constituencies, but this is really goes to the heart of the relationship between the contracted parties and ICANN. I think there's a lot of complexity and there's a lot of things that need teasing out. Just as a very broad brush, there were some arguments which I found rather unconvincing, and I would like to understand the rationale for a little bit more. So I just wanted to raise the flag and ask how you would like to receive feedback from particularly the contracted parties, but of course any other member of this group.
It's an interesting question because I'm not sure that I'm the right person to be receiving that feedback. This is actually in part done for this group in order to formulate the policy. But then also at the end of the day, there's a legal principle that either applies or doesn't to whatever policy is created. So I think I'd leave it to your guidance on how you'd like to receive that or put that into the mix. We'll certainly be engaged on it in any way we can to help.
Go ahead, Emily.
It's really, this is something that something that we discussed this morning. Chris made some interventions which were very helpful. ICANN is a player in this to some extent and needs its voice to be heard, but that doesn't just involve throwing a legal memo into the ring and then withdrawing, in my opinion. That these are issues in which there can be arguments, disagreement, and just as we spent best part of a day on about three lines describing access, for third parties. This is an area where we will need some consistent dialogue with ICANN in order to understand each other's points of views and contribute to a better policy outcome. Like it or not, ICANN.org is a stakeholder in this multi-stakeholder policy process. It is not a passive recipient of the outcome, particularly where, as I'm sure, you know, I don't need to explain to you, that there are legal consequences potentially for the organisation and its directors. It is a stakeholder, and it must, in my opinion, participate more than just throwing a memo into the ring.
Your caustic question assumes that that's something I would disagree with, and it's not, and we're happy to engage at whatever level you'd like us to engage in, but this is your policy process, and we will participate in it at your will.
Okay, thank you, Emily. Thomas?
Thanks for joining, JJ, Dan, and others on the phone. I have to confess I didn't have too much time to go through the memo because it was sent in the last minute. And I really applaud you guys for having put so much effort into shedding some light on this difficult subject. One point that I particularly like is that there seems to be an emerging consensus within this group as well as inside ICANN.org that drafting a code of conduct and presenting that to the authorities is a valid path forward, because I think with what we're trying to achieve here, particularly the UAM and other things, we are going to stretch the boundaries of GDPR and enter uncharted territory, and I think we will only get legal certainty if we get the confirmation that a code of conduct is accepted. More or less following up on what Alan has asked, this memo, as well as the previous memo that we received, it is unintentional, but they read like we're trying to come up with arguments against the joint controller agreement. So in the last memo, there was an example about a travel agency quoted that where the Article 29 group said this is not a joint controller agreement. I think it was example 7. But example 8 was not mentioned, where a comparable scenario from the travel industry was mentioned, where the Article 29 group concluded that a joint controller situation was present. Also, this memo talks a lot about implementation issues, and I accept all that, and I actually think it would be much easier for us to just have an appendix to existing agreements rather than being forced to come up with joint controller agreements. But implementation or liability benefits or difficulties can't dictate what concept is present. And since we are now analyzing public comment and have to assess whether we need to change our preliminary recommendation, I, for one, have not been convinced that we can move away from the joint controller situation. So we have – sure.
Let me just address that before you go on so I don't forget the point, because I think it's really important. I think that is in part because there is an assumption built into the materials that they were responding to about joint controllership being the right view. And our counsel, whether right or wrong, is advising us that they disagreed with that. So the memos that are being prepared are in response to assumptions that are being made that they are responding to. So I think that's logical, that in fact it would be somewhat retorting the present thinking that they see existing in the group or in some of the writings. I completely agree with you that if you have a concern that our counsel or ICANN's approach is too slanted based on its bias, our public interest bias, I might say, then, in fact, that's why we've hired Ruth to take a look at it from a slightly different angle and to bring her into this mix as well. So I appreciate what you're saying. I just wanted to make sure I addressed that.
And thanks for saying that. And I think, you know, we're all leaning towards certain solutions and try to make a case for those solutions, right? And as I said, it would be great if we had alternatives that would be less cumbersome to implement. So I see the implementation issues. But the arguments against the joint controller situation that have been voiced in the memo, I don't find particularly convincing. I will just highlight very few points. One is that allegedly the means of processing are not jointly determined. And if you look at the Article 29 working paper, that also says that means are what data is to be collected and to whom the data is being made accessible. So we have a discussion about means although the technical means, you know, what servers to be used are not being determined. So there is a joint determination of the means as well as the purposes. We have the policymaking inside ICANN. We have the RRAs that are being negotiated. There is even a process for changing the agreements where the contracted parties are sitting at the table. So this is joint activity. The community development, policy development is joint activity. ICANN is not a standards body. You know, that was the argument that was made, that whatever standards body could then be deemed a controller. The situation here is different because ICANN actually enforces the policies and whether contracted parties abide by the policies. So you have an element of control and sanctioning. There are audits carried out. ICANN asks for data to do compliance audits. So this goes above and beyond what other standards organizations are doing. Also, if you look at trying to minimize or manage liability risk for contracted parties plus ICANN, if we fail to come up with a joint controller agreement where it is required factually, that would be something that can be sanctioned. And the idea behind Article 26 is, and I think that this memo doesn't talk at all about the micro level versus the macro level. So if you have complex scenarios with a multitude of processing activities with different players, Article 26 is meant to prevent the data subject from trying to identify who's responsible for what and at whom to direct rectification requests or erasure requests and the like. So that shall protect the data subjects more in an online environment that is very complex these days. And if we fail I'll be done in a second. If we fail to do that, I think there's a real risk of the contracted parties plus ICANN being sanctioned. So I think from a strategic point of view, it would be beneficial to take the joint controller situation as a starting point, put something into the draft code of conduct presented to the authorities, and if they say that you can get away with less, which I think doesn't accurately reflect reality, then you can roll it back if you're permitted to do so. But I think taking a JCA as a starting point is the least risky approach, and I think we can find ways to make it manageable from an implementation perspective. But again, I'm happy to be advised differently, but the arguments in the memo I didn't find convincing enough to change my mind.
Thank you, and I think that proves, in fact, your quick reading was a good reading and a thorough one. You went very deep into the content. I don't know if Undina would be available to answer, but I think our goal is to keep the answer very short at this point. But if you'd like to respond, Undina, I think that'd be helpful. If we could keep the response short, though, maybe there's also a way we could – I think this is a very good discussion, a very important one, but maybe not necessary for the answer that we need today. So maybe we could, I don't know how you're using your legal committee or other groups, but maybe there's somewhere else you could put this discussion so we could go deeper into it and provide better analysis.
Yeah, especially since your outside counsel is up very late. So we'll take a short answer. I think Dan has an intervention. And then is that a new hand?
I have three people in the queue. I mean, another option is we could hear the comments and questions and then pick them all up together.
No, I think it's very important that if we're going to get a comment like that, that sort of sets the tone, that at least there's an ability to respond to that in short, because I think there, as someone said earlier, rational minds can disagree on these topics.
Okay, go ahead if your counsel has a response.
Yes, and thank you for the comments so far. Specifically, Mr.
Go ahead,
Richard,
Adina, if you can hear it.
Hello. Sorry, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Now we can hear you, yes.
Okay. So thank you very much for the comments so far. Maybe just a brief response on the means of processing. I think we will have to deeper analyze whether this understanding of determining the means of processing that you, Mr. Rickert, I think were referring to in terms of the Article 29 Working Party opinion on controllers and processors, whether this very limited understanding was made in order to differentiate controllers and processes and allowing maybe controllers under certain circumstances to determine the means on a more abstract level and being able to outsource certain more detailed technical activities to processes. But whether this might be different when we talk about determining control as such as a requirement also for joint controllership, as this is maybe the way I understand the decisions that have been given so far from specifically the European Court of Justice on that topic, and then also the opinion of the Advocate General that just recently came out in Facebook Fashion Idea, where I think it's a more, you know, it goes beyond just determining certain what would have to be collected as data. It's a more technical understanding from my point of view, because when they speak about means, they really look very detailed which party is determining what in terms of Facebook and their use of plugins. And similarly, when we look at the decision Facebook Wirtschaftsakademie, it's a similar, very technical understanding when it comes to determining the means. So it's a great point that you are raising, but I think there might be also different views possible here in this regard.
Thank you, Udina. Okay, we have about 10 more minutes. Terry, I'm going to ask you to put the timer up. So I have Diane, James, Allen, and Dan. I don't know if Dan needs to go up, but I'm going to just ask folks to be concise where you can. Diane?
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, JJ, for presenting this to us and for working forward on the legal front. This is really a question of law, and the memo acknowledges that. What it doesn't acknowledge is that a deep factual analysis has been done to date with our work, and this does set up and brought us to the conclusion of thinking that a joint controllership agreement is supported here. And the reason is for numerous enumerations that Thomas has explained, but that there is a legal control issue here from a contractual standpoint, through the different technical and overlap in processing activities. And the memo seems to focus very much on the advantages and the strategic reasons to land on a sole controllership framework. But this is a question of law. And to date, the legal and the factual analysis supports a legal conclusion of a joint controllership agreement. And a very important thing to note is that the memo misstates that joint controllership means that it has to be joint and several liability, meaning that there's no proportionality related to the costs associated with liability. But that's the benefit of a joint controllership agreement, as Article 28 supports the proportionate layout for data subjects as well as the parties involved to be able to only be responsible financially for the proportionate liability for which they process data. So I think that should be carefully taken into analysis when coming to a conclusion.
Thank you, Diane. I'm going to go to James. Kurt, could you be thinking about the appropriate next steps? Because it sounds like there's a lot of rich discussion envisioned on this. James.
Hi, thanks, James speaking. Thanks and kudos and all that I'm not good at. I'm not going to argue the legal substance of this memo and my opinions on it because I'm not qualified and I'm caring less and less by the minute. But I think that it's important that we nail down something with regard to ICANN's role and ICANN's position as we develop these policies. So I'm asking this group, regardless of where we land with this particular memo, is that we should consider putting a qualifier in front of our final report that essentially says that we, all of our policy recommendations are predicated on the idea that ICANN's role is as a controller, joint controller, independent controller, whatever, is understood and codified. And absent that, these recommendations, and I'm sorry to say, the work of this EPDP just kind of evaporates in a puff of smoke. And I say that because then that puts the ball back on Oregon and John's team and his outside counsel to say, well, what do you want? Do you want to take this on and you want to take on, you know, all, everything that comes with it? Or do we want to just kind of, walk away and live with the status quo? And I think we kind of have to, because one of the balls has to stop spinning. And I think this is the way to at least get some static frame of reference that we can work on. So that's what I'm putting on the table. And I don't know if you have any strong heartburn about that approach for org, but or if anyone does, but I feel like something has to be kind of pinned down so we can move forward. Thanks.
Thanks, James. Alan G.
Thank you. I suspect I'm going in the same direction with very different words, and it's in response to your response to Emily. And you said the memo is coming to us. It's really up to us to do what we want with it, and you're happy to participate in that process. Ultimately, whatever we come out with is going to go to the board, and the board and its counsel has a fiduciary responsibility to do what's right for ICANN or what it believes is the best for ICANN. So given that, I think it really is much more important for there to be active participation. I know we only have two liaisons or observers or whatever from the board here, but we're making decisions which is then going to have to pass muster from the board itself with your advice and your legal team's advice, and I think your participation and the board's participation would help us get to a place where they're not going to have to refuse what we say because they think it's bad for ICANN. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan G. Dan, thanks for waiting on the phone, and I think that will bring us to closure. We'll go to Kurt for next steps.
Thank you very much, everybody, for all the great input. I think Emily asked how to give input. You know, we did mark it as a draft. We definitely do want to get feedback. For example, Thomas pointed out in the first memo, we had given one example on this memo. We took his feedback.
Dan, I'm so sorry. We cannot hear you. It's just muddled. It's like gravelly muddle. You want to try? Can you try to back away from your microphone?
All right. This is Dan trying again. Is this better?
It again.
This is Dan speaking. Can you hear me?
Sort of.
All right, I'll pass. Sorry.
Okay. So, Kurt, I guess Dan's going to type. Dan, if you can type for us. So, we've heard a lot here on the potential of a code of conduct, but the need to address the wrinkle tied into that. People here learning from the data mapping that went into the thinking behind the memo that led to the independent controller, disagreement on the joint controller versus the sole controller, a need for ICANN's continued role in developing these recommendations and policies that affect these agreements, and maybe the idea of some introductory language in the final report that creates some kind of caveat or introductory language to put the onus back on ICANN tied into these issues. Where should this conversation continue? Do you have some suggestions?
Yes, thanks. I have three suggestions, or there's three parallel paths here. One is we're going to discuss recommendation 13 and the amendment to it that was created by a small team. In that discussion, that might heighten or lessen the urgency of the issue and the timing of the discussion and the timing with which these things need to get settled. So we're going to do that first. Second, I would offer to the contracted parties and whoever else wants to attend maybe a follow-up call when it's a better time for everybody and they've had more time to. as we read the memo and we say, well, where'd that come from? You know, that's, you know, we have a process for that, which is ask a question to ICANN. So we need to create some sort of maybe fast track process for that, where Dan can take those specific questions we have about rationale in the memo directly to the ICANN team. So we'll, John, we'll let you know if we want to have a follow-up call. And we'll have our discussion about recommendation 13, and we'll use that other process as need be. And thanks very much, John. And
yeah,
thanks to counsel on the call.
Yeah, thank you
thank
so
you.
Much. So should we turn to recommendation 13 now? 5-minute stretch. We're going to come back to recommendation 13, and we're not coming sure what we're coming back to, but let's have a 5-minute break. We're just going to move around for a second, Caboose.
Yeah, please, yeah. Just for a moment, please, yes. Before you go to the break. Yeah. Or after the break, give me the floor. Thank you.
Hello, sound check. This is Daniel Halloran. Can you hear me? Hello, Dan Halloran here. Can you hear me? This is a sound check.
Yes. Dan, this is Andrea from staff. I can hear you on the phone. I'm just waiting for somebody in the room to verify that they can hear you.
Yeah, I'm chatting with Terry. Thanks. Hopefully she can hear me.
Oh, good.
Thank you. Hello, Terry, can you hear me? I'm hearing from other people that they can hear me on the audio cast, so I'm trusting you'll be able to hear me next time. Sorry about the trouble with the microphone. is Dan Halloran.
This is Dan Halloran.
And for Terry Agnew.
Terry Agnew.
Terry, can you read
Terry, me? Can you read me?
Thank you, Terry.
Recommendation 13, and depending on what happens with David, we're going to go to recommendation 1, either purpose 2 or recommendation 1.
Can everyone please reconvene, if you don't mind? Or even if you do mind, I guess. I know. But we need to go to recommendation 13 if we're going to keep going. So, we would like to go. Do you guys think you could go outside, David?
David, is it going to go outside?
So, we are planning to go beyond 5:30. A lot of people are leaving tomorrow early, and so right now we're planning to go to 6:45. Okay? What we're going to do is I want to pick up recommendation 13, and we're going to Marika's going to set it up for us. We're going to look at the small team proposed updated language. Then, depending on, David's going to be trying to work with folks on purpose 2. We may come back to purpose 2, but then we may go to recommendation 1, other purposes. So we're going to do purpose recommendation 13 first, and then we'll decide whether we go to purpose 2 or recommendation 1. Before I have Marika set it up, she's going to set up recommendation 13 for us. I'm told Cavus we could go to him after the break. Cavus?
Yes, and a separate note. At the previous session before the coffee break, when considering purpose 2, after the legal advice was given, in modifying that text of the alternative version of that purpose, I stated that, quote, we have not asked any legal advice on the matter, end of quote. Later on, I recognized that, in fact, such legal advice was sought, on which I was not aware. In view of that, I hereby modify the statement by the following. I would have no objection to consider any legal advice if such advice is formally sought. This modified statement would supersede and replace my earlier advice in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification, Cavus. Okay, Marika's going to set us up on recommendation 13. I'm going to take us back so long ago to yesterday, to the high bar, and our charge here on recommendation 13 is there any group that thinks the concerns expressed in the public comments were not sufficiently addressed by this proposal? And then is there any group that cannot live with the proposed language? Marika, can you remind us what happened in Recommendation 13 discussion?
Thanks, Gina. This is Marika. But before doing that, if you don't mind, Dan actually indicated that his mic has been fixed and he would like to make his point, if that is all right. Dan, go ahead.
Thanks, everybody. And I promise this will segue right into the Recommendation 13 language. Thanks to Emily and Thomas and everybody else for the good feedback and constructive feedback on the memo. And apologies that got in right at the end. And just a note of caution too, that it was responding to what was in the initial report text. And then, you know, next we're going to look at the proposed updated language from the small team, which I think is make some positive changes. And I think maybe even if we can talk about yesterday there were some additional changes to the small groups work that put in the concept of something like as necessary, because it opens the door to let us move forward and keep discussing these things. And when we get to implementation, then once we have a better refined and agreed upon view about how these things should apply, then we can apply them to the parties as necessary, not necessarily across the board. For example, like Rec 13 on its face right now applies globally, even in places where GDPR might not apply. So I don't know that we would need to enter a joint controller agreement, let's say, with a registry in China that only has Chinese registrars and Chinese registrants. So I think adding in as necessary, I think maybe that was a Ruth addition to one or two of the recommendations yesterday, might be very helpful. But I definitely think the updates towards Rec 13 go a long way and could help fix this. And thanks for all the constructive feedback. We take further feedback on that either, in writing or, verbally. If you guys want to relay that to us, I like the idea of taking it up in the legal team or red lines or however you guys want to submit that. And thanks again for the feedback.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Dan. This is Marika again. So you've seen the language up on the screen, and I think Dan already hinted partly to the conversation that the group had. So they considered that the concerns that were expressed that mainly were focused on the specificity in the recommendation and maybe tying the hands of the parties that will ultimately need to implement the appropriate agreement. And as such, revised language has been proposed, which would allow for more flexibility for contracted parties and ICANN org to negotiate and work out the appropriate agreement that is then determined following further investigation and research. So that is the approach the small team has taken. They did note that, of course, the ICANN org memo wasn't published at the time they discussed this, so they did note that that might impact their consideration of the input provided and the changes made. So I think the question is for the full team, including the small team members, whether indeed have concerns been addressed, or in light as well of the memo, are there any concerns that are currently not addressed here in this proposed updated language?
Okay, let's take 5 minutes to read over the proposed language, the updated language, and if there's anything in light of the memo or the discussions to date. But otherwise, the question is there any group that thinks the concerns expressed in the proposal, they haven't sufficiently addressed the public comments in the proposed language? And is there any group that cannot live with this language? We got 5 minutes on the clock. Okay, we have about 1 minute left for recommendation 13, then we're going to come back together on that. Okay, David, we're going to start in here, okay, on recommendation 13. So anyone have any proposals that they want to make to modify the small team input based on the memo for recommendation 13? Thomas.
Thanks very much. I'd just like to go on the record that I think it's less than optimal for us to move away from requiring a JCA to be concluded. Both recommendation 13 as well as recommendation 21 are wide open in terms of how this is going to be implemented. And given the resistance that we saw in the memos to make a clear confession that it shall be or that ICANN will enter into a joint controller agreement, I think will ultimately lead to a situation where we're going to have something else. And ICANN seems to have difficulties with the complexities of implementing a joint controller agreement with the perceived additional risks with the joint and several liability. And I think it would be far better to require the conclusion of a joint controller agreement as a recommendation, because that will give the board that will ultimately have to adopt our recommendations the comfort that the community is behind that and that they don't have to fear being blamed for doing something that is not in ICANN's own best interests. And since the recommendation that we put into our initial report said subject to legal advice, there is still the opportunity to move away from a JCA if we get legal advice or otherwise get confirmation that we can have something else than a joint control agreement and yet be compliant.
Okay.
But if we move away from that, I think there's no way that we're ever going to have it.
Thanks, Thomas. Terry, can you put 10 minutes on the clock because I don't want this. I want us to try to manage this in a short time frame. So I'm going to go to Stephanie, and if you could help understand any perspective to Thomas's proposal to require the joint controller agreement, that would be great. Thanks.
Stephanie Barron, for the record, briefly, I would just agree with Thomas. I don't see how we can avoid forcing this issue. You can't have a sole, if it's a sole controllership, what is it over? And we are spending an awful lot of time trying to figure out things that will enforce disclosure. So how do we do that? If ICANN is not a controller under that situation, then that all falls away. So let's not waste our time. We need that JCA.
So I want to go to the small team. Is there anything from the small team that would lead us to, stick with this language in light of the insights and recommendations expressed by Thomas and Stephanie? Margie?
This is Margie. I'm having a hard time with this because, we see their memo. Obviously, people have questions about it. But I'm worried that it'll make it harder for ICANN to implement what the policy is if they're not comfortable with what the designation is. And so I prefer the language that the small team came up with, which at least gave flexibility so that we could go either way. And I guess I'm really struggling with how that impacts our our recommendations. I'd like to understand why it's a problem to give that flexibility to ICANN.
Anyone want to speak to that? Yeah, Milton, and if everybody could stay brief, that would be great.
Milton Mueller. So I think Thomas explained very well why we need to, why they would want to go away from that. So the ICANN's legal memo has already indicated they're uncomfortable with the joint controllership idea. So if the process involves negotiation between the contracted parties and ICANN over who has responsibility for what, it's clear that ICANN's tendency is to avoid joint controllership. So if we think that joint controllership is the best model, a subject on which I am not expert enough to have a strong opinion, but if indeed the lawyers among us think that it is, then we should definitely say that in our recommendation and let ICANN respond to that.
So what would the specific text be? What would be the specific text? If somebody could be thinking about that, how we would modify the recommendation, that would be great. Alan G., did I go to you, or are you next? Alan G., Georgios, Diane, and Margie, are you still in? Okay.
Okay. I neither have the legal expertise to be an expert on this, nor have I had a chance to read the memo. So I'd like to ask a question. I'm hearing things here which imply that ICANN may want to take the position that the contracted parties are a sole controller, because I've heard words saying that ICANN is not a controller. I thought I had heard, and from the very brief reading, that ICANN was suggesting joint independent controllers, or whatever the right word is multiple independent controllers, as opposed to not being a controller. ICANN is setting the rules. We sit in PDP meetings and set the rules. There is no way that ICANN cannot have some controller relationship, some controller responsibilities, in my mind. It's inconceivable. Now, whether they are a joint controller or two independent controllers, or they are a sole controller and have data processing agreements with all the contracted parties, I think is an interesting discussion. But do people here really believe there is that ICANN is attempting to say they have no controller relationship at all? Because if that's one of the things on the table, then that's something I have enough expertise to discuss, and you know, and I think it's a different discussion than I thought we were having here, because this updated 13 says ICANN should enter into a JPA or data processing agreements with the contractor parties, which implies it's the sole controller. So we seem to be mentioning something which I didn't even think was on the table here, and I'm confused. Thank you.
Thomas, did you want to briefly reply, or you just went in the thread, the queue? Go to the queue? Okay. Georgios, and then Diane, and then I'll come back to Thomas, and then I think we should check in.
Yes, George Solentis from the GAC. On this issue, again, I'm not also an expert on this, but I have to clarify something also given the comments that were submitted, that when we talk about joint controllership, we are not talking about equal responsibilities here. We are talking about regarding the processing activity that is under scrutiny about the controllership. There is the relevant responsibility under the agreement. So we have to have, I understand that we have to have a better analysis of what processing activity we are discussing about, but then each one has to take the responsibility for the controllership that is processor about this activity. So there is an analysis that has to be made. It doesn't mean that joint controller doesn't mean that you have to have equal responsibility. It refers to the processing activity, and as soon as we clarify this, I think all pieces of the puzzle will fall into place. So I don't believe that there is a good strategy to say, and here I will agree with what Stephanie and Thomas said before, we should keep this idea of the joint controllership. What we have to do is to identify the processing activities and what this controllership addresses to them.
Okay. Thank you, Georgios. Diane, and I've got Ruth in there.
Sure. Georgios, your comments makes a lot of sense. And add to that, our work and our mission was to evaluate both make a factual analysis and apply the law, and that's what we've done. So we have done an extensive factual analysis based upon the different data elements and the legal bases, and we've set up processes. And now we, no matter what, have to come out with some type of something to support all that and to take all of that and make a recommendation. So by making the recommendation that a JCA is to believe to exist supports the work that we've done. And so it ties it together. Land with nothing is really not giving the board the capability to move our work forward. And so we have to think of it as a big picture, all tied together. And so a recommendation that I would like to put forward is to update recommendation 13 to simply eliminate when it says data protection agreements, such as data processing agreement, Article 28, to just eliminate that component. And then we're still saying enters into required data protection agreements, such as joint controller agreement, as appropriate. And so we're making a recommendation,
okay,
and we're trying to support the work and giving the board the power and the tools that they need to go forward with our policy.
Great. Thank you for the concrete suggestions. I'm just going to repeat it. If you're looking at the proposed updated language, the concrete suggestion is ICANN.org negotiates and enters into required data protection agreements, such as joint controller agreement, as appropriate. If people, as I continue on, I know some are trying to clarify questions, but if you could express support for that modified language, that would be helpful. Thomas. I had Thomas, Emily, Ruth, Chris.
So you were asking for concrete proposals. I think that the initial report language has everything that we need. It has the concrete.
Thomas, I'm sorry. I really you weren't here yesterday morning, but I'd like you to try to work from the proposed updated language, because we're trying to we defer to the small team and all the work that they did. So if you could just factor that into your thoughts. The small team spent a lot of time working up the proposed language.
I've been part of that. I know.
Okay.
It was a painful process. I would need to consider alternative language.
Okay. Could you look at that and then come back? Because we really did have that as a ground rule yesterday, and I'm sorry you weren't here when we set that up. Emily.
Personally, I have no strong opinion on the wording of this. I'll just get that out. But I can see that others around the room do feel strongly about it, and it follows, as Dan said in his remarks just before this discussion, it follows on quite closely from the discussions we've just had and the ICANN memo. So there's a lot of new stuff going through our tired brains. In addition, and that has superseded to some extent the work of the small teams. As we have Ruth here, as we have engaged her, and I don't want to put you on the spot, Ruth, because I know we've just had an exposition from ICANN's lawyers on it. I don't want to put you on the spot to either agree or disagree. But if you have any input that can help us on this issue, I would really welcome it.
Ruth, you're up, and then I'll go to Chris, and then I'm going to see if we can move forward on the language.
Okay. So thank you, Emily. I had two suggestions. The first is, from having read the memo that came out, and from having read, albeit rather quickly, some of the previous documentation, it seems to me that there are some areas where I think people are at cross-purposes, and where, with a smaller discussion, we could narrow down where there is disagreement or where there is doubt. So I would suggest possibly a smaller discussion on that to try and narrow, as I say, the areas where there's uncertainty. Secondly, I agree with, I think, a number of comments that were made, that this is an area where, I think as you said actually, Emily, where two people who are perfectly rational can simply disagree over the analysis. It's a very complicated and difficult area. One possible approach, which ICANN and the other contracting parties may want to think about, if they've tried to narrow down areas of uncertainty, is to discuss this with EDPB, for example, with a view to getting guidance there, which might reduce uncertainty again.
So, thank you, Ruth. I'm going to go to Chris. And I think our charge here right now, maybe Marika can confirm, is that we are trying to get to the final report. So I think what we have as our charge today is to try to make sure that you've been responsive to the public comments, the proposed language reflects that, and then there can still be all of these follow-on activities and discussions, but we're trying to be responsive to public comments to in the final report. Chris.
Thank you, Chris Despain. I think that I have no issue with the proposed updated language, and I have no issue with the suggestion to take out the reference to data processing agreement and leave the only specific reference as joint control agreement. I don't think it makes any difference, but I'm happy to do that. I have a major issue with making a recommendation that simply says joint control agreement. I think that says enter into joint control agreements. I think that removes all flexibility. Contracted parties may want ICANN in certain circumstances to be a sole controller. They may in certain circumstances want ICANN to be a joint controller with them. And to make the assumption that the right answer for everything is a joint controller agreement, especially in circumstances where there is conflicting legal advice, conflicting maybe too strong a word, but advice of different types from different people, and where we're being told by pretty much everybody with a legal understanding of GDPR that these things are difficult to assess, and it's not necessarily that easy to come up with the right answer, and sometimes there's more than one answer. To remove the flexibility by mandating in a recommendation that it should be a joint control agreement is, in my view, not a sensible way forward. But I stress that's just my personal view, and I thank you for allowing me to state it.
Okay. I'm going to go to Thomas, but then I'm going to come back and check with you all. The proposal on the table right now is required data protection agreements such as joint controller agreements as appropriate with the contracted parties. So I'm going to come back to you and ask, is there anyone in your group, is there any group that can't live with the updated proposal, given the insights to date and given the public comments received on the initial report? Thomas.
Yeah, you've asked for concrete suggestions. So my proposed language would be the EPDP team recommends that I can negotiates an entrance into a joint controller agreement unless legal advice or other input suggests otherwise with the contracted parties. So that we have the joint controller agreement as the starting point, because I guess it will help the board hugely to be comfortable in moving forward with that, which otherwise they might not be able to.
Could you please read it one more time? Enters into a joint controller agreement unless
legal advice or other input suggests otherwise.
So I want to go back to Chris, who just said that he was less comfortable with the idea of directing to joint controller agreement only. Does that is that something you could live with?
I'm all about I have no right to say I can or can't live with it. That said, I'm comfortable as long as there's the flexibility in there. If you want, if the EPDP team wants to make a sort of comment that gives a clear impression that they believe that the most likely outcome of this is a joint control agreement, I have no issue with that, provided that there's the flexibility of doing something else in the event that that something else is what's required. Okay. That said, from a legal point of view, I would want, can you just read back the words again for me, please?
Do you want to just read it, Thomas, since you have it?
It's the end bit, Thomas, the bit where it says when you shouldn't do it.
Enters into a joint controller agreement unless legal advice or other input suggests otherwise. You know, my point is that we have the joint controller agreement as the status quo.
I get it, yeah. I'm just wondering...
If you find better words for that...
I'm just wondering if it would be clearer if it said unless legal advice or other input indicates another form of agreement would be more appropriate.
That's okay?
Yeah, I agree with that.
But that, I think, gives a clearer what would happen if you didn't have that.
Can you just say it one more time, Chris?
Whatever Thomas's words are, legal advice or other input indicates a different form of agreement would be more appropriate.
Okay.
The problem with that, of course, is it doesn't allow for the possibility of no agreement, which is also a possibility, isn't it, Ruth? So if we're clear that we understand that sort of the direction we're heading in and everybody's comfortable with the general direction, I'm sure we can find the right words for it.
Okay. So it sounds like I'm going to go to Alan, and then I'm going to check in if everybody's okay with this approach, and then maybe we'll pause and try to type up some language. But it sounds like we have agreement, just like we did with Purpose 7, you know what I mean, where we just did the – so, Alan, to you, and then I'm going to check in with everybody.
Thank you. I guess I've got to register a level of discomfort that we seem to be working in a mode that whoever speaks last gets to modify the document, and you don't go forward, you don't go backwards again. And I have heard very, very few voices around this table other than Thomas and I think Stephanie saying it's clear it's a joint processor.
And Diane?
Okay, I take it back. I'm just not comfortable that, you know, we edit in one direction only, and we either have to accept that or propose something different.
I may have misread the room, but I was sensing that there were some really strong feelings, and if we had a bit of an out, that the others could live with it. So that maybe that was my mistake, Alan, but I was picking that up and trying to work with that proposal.
I guess I look at the small teamwork in this case as being a waste of time because it's been discarded and, you know, just going back to where we were before, and I don't feel comfortable with that. I can live with it. I don't feel comfortable.
Okay. Margie? Oh, and then I'm sorry, Kurt. I'll go to Margie, sure. And then come to you because I overlooked Margie.
Sure, and I've been one of those voices that I wanted to give ICANN the flexibility. And with Thomas's language, I actually think that we have a memo that provides otherwise. So I almost think the carve-out's already been met by the memo we just received. So I'm inclined to go with what Diane had suggested. I don't know earlier, and she her language was a little closer. I mean, somewhere in between what Thomas is saying. But I feel that Thomas's language doesn't work for me.
Yes, Kurt.
Okay. So so what's unique about this discussion is nobody spoke up in favor of the proposed update, even though there's, you know, it came from somewhere.
Excuse me, we were never asked that question. We were only asked who opposed it.
Well, I thought that we needed to ask. I am responsible because I thought I understood that from Marika's intro that we needed to see, based on the new information, if we needed to modify the language.
So what I'd like to do at this point is take a look at what's been said in this meeting, take that back, we'll modify, we'll create another version of this, so the team can look at that version that incorporates the comments of the team around the table to avoid what the phenomena Alan was talking about, and then bring this up for discussion tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
And then so we could have a balanced discussion between the proponents of the modification, which is different from what the language we're talked about is. And then, so everyone, I'd like you to re-engage for 55 minutes. So try to just, you can do it. You can. I'd like you to re-engage for 55 minutes and try to get to a conclusion on purpose two. So we've reiterated this, and I think we can talk to it. Go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. This is Mark Anderson. Alan and I have been sitting here on the sidelines a little bit for this conversation, and feeling like we have to speak, but not exactly sure what to say here. I think where Alan and I are is, going back to our direction from yesterday. I think we feel we should place deference on what the small team came up with. I think we set a pretty high bar for that. This address, this proposed updated language addresses the public comments. It addresses the registry's comments. So from our perspective, it meets our needs. I understand Thomas's point and frustration. I can respect and appreciate that. But I think the proposed language coming out of the small team, that's the language. You scared me a little bit when you talked about coming up with new language that we're going to come back and review again. I think we need to remember the bar we set yesterday when we came to agreement on a lot of the small team recommendations. And, just remind ourselves of that bar here, and is this language we can move on with.
Yeah, thanks for your comment. And I didn't mean to say in creating different language that we would give it more deference than what the small team did. What I was trying to reset was having the discussion where the proponents of the small team recommendation took part in the discussion, which they hadn't up until 1 minute ago. So I have some thoughts about how to reset the discussion too. So that's what I prefer to do. But I do understand your comment, and we will treat the small team output with the deference that we all agreed to in the first place and having the next discussion about it.
Okay. All right. So we're going to find a time to have that small thing happen, that small conversation happen, and hopefully be very quick. Yeah. Okay. So that's as far as we're going to go right now on recommendation 13. Could I get the folks in the back to put my screen on the my computer on the screen, please? So it seems like if we can close this day or leave this room with everybody willing to walk forward on purpose two, we can leave this room with our heads pretty high. Right now I think people are feeling a little bit down because we couldn't quite nail purpose two. We just had a long, drawn-out discussion that some people have varying degrees of interest level on. So let's circle back to purpose two. I've been having a few just sort of side conversations with a few folks to see if we actually do have a place that maybe we're not thrilled with, but we certainly can walk forward and call it a consensus agreement, okay? So let's try it out with everybody just now and see how it floats, okay? What it involves is the following. It's that version of purpose two, sort of original version that came out of that small group over there in the corner. That would be the version we go forward with, okay? Doesn't have when necessary or when appropriate or whatever that phrase was in there. It's the sort of original version coming out of that group, okay? And then in the recommendation, we do the following. We have the recommendation that also came out of that group with a few changes. There's an initial footnote, which I'll show you down in a second, footnote one, which is the footnote that says we shouldn't let's just scroll down to it. The other way, sorry, I'm backwards for most people. The first footnote is purpose two should not preclude disclosure in the course of investigating intellectual property infringement. Okay? So it's what we talked about in terms of the footnote around intellectual property so that nobody can come back later and say, no, purpose two doesn't include IP. We also add a second footnote in, which is essentially the language that Stephanie had proposed. It has one tiny modification to that language when it talks about the proposed purpose two in this report is a placeholder. Okay? That was not language that Stephanie said, but I just showed it to Stephanie and Milton and the crew over there, and they seem to feel okay with that. Okay? So what we've done here is we've given a signal that we're going to keep working on this. We're going to keep working on this, which is a signal that a lot of you wanted to give. Okay? And it's in another footnote right next to the footnote on IP. And if you scroll back up a little bit, the final thing I did was separate out what you asked me to separate out, which is this issue about disclosure for legitimate purposes is not incompatible with the purposes for which such data has been collected. Just separate that out in a different sentence. We started the sentence, finally, when looking at these issues, the EPDB team will seek to ensure. Okay. Sure, why don't we scroll down to the footnote? And sorry, you can't quite get the whole thing on one page easily. Can you all read that?
Sorry, Amma in the AC room is asking whether we can post that document to the
great idea to the
chat.
Yeah, that's going to take a second for me to do. I'm going to have to do that later. Just sorry about that, Amar, and I apologize for that. You probably can email it, yes. But you don't need to save it to cloud. Yeah. So, folks, while that's happening, have a good read at this. Have a good read of what's here. Okay. So this is what we've done, folks. We're at a place that we don't love necessarily, but we're at a place where we're willing to walk forward. Stephanie, help us out here in allowing us to walk forward.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record, and I'm all for walking forward as long as it isn't over a cliff,
yes.
Into a court, you know? And I just wonder where that little paragraph about seeking to ensure that the disclosure is not incompatible with the purposes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that goes without saying, that's the law. Do we need that?
We'll seek to ensure.
We have to ensure.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe legal counsel even said put that in, but it gives me a very watery feeling when we say we will seek to ensure that we will comply with the law.
Any phrase that you want to put in there is a great phrase right now, folks. The seek to ensure, will, respect, will, whatever, you all can put in the language that makes you feel comfortable. But I feel like...
Yeah.
Is there anything?
I would just say ensure.
Will ensure. Okay.
Can we go back to the...
Hold on.
Yeah, Dave.
Wait.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Hang on, everybody. Calm down for 1 second. Yeah. So all I want to say is this was previously in there and everybody liked it, but we didn't have that initial piece, right? So all we need to do is find the language to introduce this thought, right? So all we need is someone can make a suggestion. How do we introduce this thought that starts right here? We need the thought, something, we need a few words to introduce this thought. That's all that needs to happen right now. So if you have some words, great. This should be like this, right? This is not controversial. It's just, so folks, I see a lot of hands, but I want to make sure we're going down that path, right? Okay, I'm going to go Hadia, and then I'm going to go Becky, then I'm going to go Milton, then I'm going to come back over here.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, Hadia, let's do this super fast. I feel like this is a win here.
So Hadia Al-Minyai for the record.
Yep.
So I like your proposal. I agree with it. I have only one question with regard to the wet part, wet part where it says, finally, when looking at these issues, the EPDP team will seek to ensure that disclosure for legitimate purposes. I'm not sure that we need to put for legitimate purposes. I'm just asking, why do we need to have that? Why don't we just say we'll seek to ensure that disclosure of registration data is not incompatible with the purposes for which such data has been collected? So that's my only comment, that I would take out legitimate purposes.
Okay, great.
And there is a reason for that.
Okay, great. I can't, Alan, you just joined the queue right now?
All I want to know, can you put the footnote back up without pop-ups popping up so we can actually read it?
Yeah, I'm sorry that I can't fit it all on one screen at one time. But what I could do is email it to all of you if you have it on your screen, or ask Marika to do that.
You asked us to read it before, but then Gina was playing with the screen and we never actually saw it.
Sure, I can definitely. Why don't you take over? Great. And sorry about these challenges of trying to read in real time. Okay. All right. Emily.
I had a suggested text
Great.
Change, which
yep.
is to delete from finally
yep.
to
that. And just start with disclosure.
And then just say, either you just have it like that, or you could say something like, the EPDP team notes that.
The EPDP team notes that disclosure for litigation.
We just want a way to launch in, right?
Yeah.
Or has been advised that, or is
Must
it the
not,
opinion that,
right?
Or observes that.
Observes that, and then but the is becomes a must or something like that. Acknowledges. Okay.
Then to be clear, my proposal is that you leave the rest of the sentence as drafted.
Great.
You don't change is.
Okay. So, great. Let's keep moving, and then maybe we'll all just, like, take a deep breath. We'll write this up real quick, and we'll look at it one more time. Milton.
Yeah, I think that the suggestions that Emily made actually completely defeat the purpose of this edition, and we can solve the problem by simply saying instead of will seek to, we just replace that with must. In other words, this is not something, Emily, that we can acknowledge or that we can say it will happen unless we ensure that it happens.
Okay.
That when we're dealing with disclosure policy, we have to make sure that the disclosure is not incompatible with the purposes for which the data has been collected.
Right.
That's a requirement on us. That's not some acknowledgement of a universal fact.
Right. So you could put this and change it to must. Okay, great. Let's take a few more comments and then let's just take the temperature. Folks, listen up. We're so close. We're just so close. Caboose.
I don't know who has written that text saying that EPDP will seek to ensure. It is too strong. We could say that. First of all, we don't need to say finally. We should say that EPDP noted that the disclosure for legitimate patati-patata, so on and so forth. We should not say seek to ensure. We cannot engage ourselves in any future activities. No one is
okay.
in a position to do that. This
Caboose,
is forbidden. Thank
can
you.
I check something with you real quick, which is what Milton suggested, is just saying the team must ensure that disclosure is compatible.
It is noted that, EBDP noted that the disclosure for legitimate purpose is not incompatible with the purpose for which that data has been collected.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
David, can I jump in for a second?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just want to do a little quick check-in on a much higher level. We have a purpose. We have a recommendation that is to drive your good thinking, serve as a reminder for what you're going to go deep on in phase two. That is the purpose of this recommendation language as I understand it. And then we have the footnotes so that some other elements don't get lost that were important to everyone in this room. I'm just going to observe, we have been wordsmithing most of the day. And it's not to say that the ideas are all important, but I just want to ask you if there's any way you can have a little bit of latitude in policy language, in a recommendation that's to inform your future work. So let's pick up where we were at, but I'm hearing directly contradictory words coming from every person we're going to. So I just want to put a little bit of onus back on everybody to remind ourselves where we're at and what we're trying to do and why we're asking to have this language.
Super helpful. I think we are just a hair's breadth away from agreeing on the most difficult purpose in the whole document. Okay? So I wonder if you guys would give us the trust to sit down with whoever really cares and figure out the right word, whether it's must, whatever, and then we just call this done. Okay? Would you give us the trust to go sit down with a couple folks and figure out the right word to put at the front before the sentence starts here, just the right word here, whether it's must or whatever it is? Give us the responsibility to do that with anybody who cares very strongly about it.
Absolutely trust you to do that as long as that group does not include me.
Okay. So, folks, I just want to test. Yeah. So, we have all this stuff that we've put together now, as Gina says. We are so close. So I want to test. Would you give us the trust with whoever wants to come sit down with us after we finish our meeting today at 6:45, fix these words, fix this intro so we're not running into trouble, right? This is the meat. This is what we care about. We'll fix that. Trust us to do it. So in that context, can we all walk forward and live with purpose two, okay? With this recommendation, number two, with now it's two footnotes, can we walk forward and call it a done deal? Okay, I see two cards up. Is that new as well, Caboose? Okay, so let me start with Alan. Folks, we're trying to move forward here, right? Oh, yeah. No, nobody's
comment was, if you let us old and feeble ones actually read the footnotes, it's now on the screen. If you move a little bit, I can read it. Thank you.
Who was the second card that was up?
Mark. Mark, what you got to say?
Thanks. I sort of share Alan's frustration. I haven't been able to see the full text that we were being asked to agree to. So, you know, being able to see the full text would be nice. I'm not quite sure what.
Can we get it out? It's in Adobe Connect.
Okay.
If you could look at it. So maybe we'll take
5 minutes.
Let's take five
okay,
minutes.
But I have another.
Oh, sorry, Mark.
I have another point I want to make. You know, so the text you're trying to fix is from the GDPR. It's Article 5. Section B of the GDPR. Right, there's 1B, sorry. You don't fix the text of the GDPR, right? And so you're giving me pause, you know, you're saying trust me to fix the intro text to language that's from the GDPR itself. All right. And so that's giving me a little bit of a pause there. You know, Alan and I were just talking, like, that's part of the GDPR, right? We don't
The EDP
we don't need that
team
language.
Will seek.
The language that Ruth gave us.
Yeah.
If you scroll Can you scroll up on the screen?
I don't know. I don't know if everyone's
Alan,
done.
Do you have the text in front of you so we could scroll?
Yeah.
Alan G?
Yeah.
Do you have the text now? Okay.
You're here.
I want to be super clear, Mark, that when I said trust, I said for anything that leads up to the text that's the GDPR text. No one's touching that disclosure for legitimate purposes, not compatible. No one's touching that. All we're saying is, what are the three or four words that need to say, the EDB, you know, the team recognizes this reality? That's all we're trying to figure out. There's nothing that's touching the actual. Okay. Yeah?
We've been at it all day.
Yeah.
And you've got a bone, and you're holding on to it. It's time to sleep on it.
Let's take 5 minutes and read. May I make a counter suggestion and take 5 minutes and read and talk? I think if we go home without this tonight.
Okay, it's 6:10. I'm going to do 5 minutes for reading, and then I'll give you 5 minutes for consultation.
Yeah.
It's 6:09. 5 minutes. James.
Hang on a second.
Not
wait.
To leave.
Was noted that under
Okay. That's 5 minutes. So that was 5 minutes. We're at about 5 minutes, so I'm going to give you more minutes to talk to your colleagues to see if we can come to closure.
I'm all with the Stockholm Syndrome in this particular circumstance. The timer is flashing that we're out of time. I'm trying to remember what we were going to talk about. Okay. Okay, we're going to get started again, if that's possible. It's 6:20. We're breaking at 6:45. While people are wrapping up, we are going to ask to start early tomorrow morning because so many people are leaving. So I was thinking like 7 a.m. Okay, how about 7:30? People are leaving at 3. Okay. So I didn't confess. I'm going to confess the request was 7:30, and I said 7 so I would get a little shock value, and then I could, like, go to 7:30. Okay. Where are we, David? So everybody had a chance to talk to their team. Is there anyone? Oh, we have new language for this clause. The EPDP team would need to confirm that disclosure for legitimate purposes is not compatible. Is not incompatible with the purposes for which such data has been collected. Must. Okay. Before I go to comments, I just need to see a sign of hands before I go to comments. Is there any group that cannot live with this proposal? I just want to check, and then I'm going to go to the comments. Is there any group that cannot live with this proposal? Anybody who cannot live with it? Okay. So Stephanie cannot live with it. Stephanie, let's hear from you, and then...
It is not the responsibility of the EPDP team to confirm that disclosures for legitimate purposes are not incompatible with the purposes. That is the responsibility of the controllers or joint controllers. So, you could put joint controllers or controllers must confirm that disclosure for legitimate purposes are not incompatible with the purposes for which such data has been collected. But you're saying that we have to do it. And that is a deep down into the weeds on implementation, because each particular disclosure is going to, the record show that Benedict is nodding. Maybe he's nodding at his laptop.
Alan, Cavoose, Margie, as brief as you possibly can be would be wonderful. Alan.
Here's a first for a while. I agree with Stephanie.
Okay. Stephanie agrees with Stephanie.
You cannot say that we're going to check any particular disclosure without knowing what the purpose is and what the... It just makes no sense.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. Cavoose.
Yes. If everybody is happy with the second one, EPDP notes that, I have no problem, but I was told that we should not note at this stage. If this second one is accepted by everybody, I have no problem. For the first one, if the people are not happy with the EPD, we put it in the passive voice and saying that there is a need to confirm that. So please delete at the first the EDP team needs. There is a need to confirm. No, at the beginning, first one, not this one. Yeah.
You may want to eliminate the word.
Delete EPDP. Yeah. There is a need to confirm. Yeah. Who will do that? I don't know. There is a need to confirm that. So any of the two is acceptable for me.
Thank you for your flexibility, Cavoose. Margie, as brief as you can be to make your point.
Sure. Good, you took out joint. The other option was just to, delete it, and we'll get to it later. But this would be fine too.
Both of those are fine for you. Both are fine for Margie. Mark Anderson. Stephanie,
Can you?
I'm okay. You're missing an article up above. A need to confirm.
There is a need to confirm. Okay. So which one are we doing, the top one?
Either one.
Okay. Is there any group that cannot live with this proposal for purpose two? I feel like I need a drum roll. Purpose two and recommendation two with the appropriate footnote and guidance and recommendation two to inform the next phase. Alan?
I'm going to make a note, and I don't expect to debate it or fix it here. In all of our discussions, we have, by accident or not, omitted law enforcement as from one of the groups that may be able to get access under a law, under an access method. And I would I'd like to note that for future discussion.
It's 6:26. We did it.
It feels like, and I hope it's not purely from exhaustion. I really hope it's not purely from exhaustion. But it feels like we have a pathway forward on the most vexing thing. Okay? And this only works is if everyone in this around this table is willing to go back to their respective constituencies and say, yeah, it was really a pain in the butt, but we got to this place and it's okay. We can live with this for XYZ reason. Okay? Right? So that's, you know, that's where this is going to work. But I want to say I'm super proud. I know it's a really difficult thing. We're not going to try to load anything else on you tonight, right? Or no? Taskmaster. Yeah. Yeah. So what – no, right, they're the angry mob. The issue here is what's our start time tomorrow?
So
we've got crazy.
So I'm just gonna say we have a bit of a dilemma because we booked the room.
Let's encourage
everyone to please step up and come at 7:30. Come on, this is the last face to face before the final report. We have all of those pieces, David. I don't know why you're taking those off, but we have all of those pieces.
This is what we got to do.
We have the starred items that you prioritize. We have at least three of those that we have not even touched. Four. We have four of those.
There's all this to do.
Recommendation one, the other purposes. The split for purpose one, I have not seen that language. Who's crafting the language for the purpose one split?
No, that's not good.
So the registries.
I don't think we have – so it's the – the proposed language in our comments is we don't have new language beyond what was in the registry stakeholder group comments. So those, yeah.
The purpose one proposed language is in the registry's comments in the public the PCRT for purpose one. Okay, James, it looks like you're poised to say something.
Well, just that we had that also. That qualifier of as subject to the terms and conditions, and we just wanted that with both parts of whatever split there was, and we were good.
Okay. Hadia?
For the record. So I guess we already agreed to what they had for the purpose split the language they had for splitting the purpose. But I think what we were waiting to see was the data elements. So we said we are fine with everything that they suggested, but we needed to look at the data elements.
Okay, so why don't we dust off that language just for tomorrow morning to make sure that everybody's clear that that's the agreement, and then when we get to the data elements, it might need to be tweaked or refined. Stephanie, thanks for waiting. I overlooked you.
Thanks. Stephanie Perrin, for the record. Just a question in availability, and I do understand if you have to leave early, you have to leave early, but that's why we have alternates. Can they pull in the alternates to replace them for the remaining time? Rather than have us start at 5 o'clock?
The time was, we were going to start at 7:30.
I know, that was a joke because I was looking at your agenda.
Oh.
Should we say this?
I'm sorry, I had to sneeze.
Bless you.
Can we make sure the coffee and preferably some sort of starch is here before we get here?
Go
breakfast opens at 6:30. Breakfast opens at 6:30, and you could probably get a to-go box.
Yeah, and you can go across the street to the donut shop, too.
And we will have coffee here, too, Terry says.
Yeah.
We will have coffee.
I'm just asking to make sure it's here at then, but not at 8. Not at 8.
Not at 8, yes.
Mark, are you in the queue? Okay.
James is.
Yes, just noting on the agenda, and I'm sorry to point out that when we started this circus, we said that we could not leave Toronto without talking about some implementation approach or plan. We have an idea. Where is it?
It's
I don't see it.
It's not on there.
It's not on there. I don't see it.
Now, David, if you could do that, that would be impressive.
The good news, David and Gina and everyone, is that we have an idea that I think really, I don't want to say everybody will agree to. I said, I don't think anybody
can
would care.
Can you float it right now?
But,
let's hear it.
Because I'm assuming we're going to go right up to the wire with this EPDP, is that the temporary spec and the EPDP recommendations coexist for some period of time, and we're thinking till January 1, 2020. That gives us time to turn the battleship and get all this stuff coded.
Okay.
Say it one more time, a little more slowly.
It's essentially, and I can already see staff is like their heads are spinning around that this is not. This is we're coloring way outside the lines. That the temporary spec, or at least the obligations of the temporary spec, would remain enforceable alongside of the EPDP adopted recommendations, whatever they look like.
So we will make a policy recommendation to keep the temporary spec in there.
Well, I don't think we
in
can.
Parallel.
Think
we
can't
call it that, though.
It can't be called the temporary spec.
That something be in place as a specification identical
correct
to the temporary spec or close.
Transition specification.
Okay, guys,
like
guys. Okay. Great.
We're going to talk about it tomorrow. I invited them to just give us the overview so we understood what it was. Okay, it's Stephanie. Did you have a comment? We weren't going to go into it. I just asked them to flag it so we heard what it was. Go ahead.
I was just going to submit that all you need to do is copy everything from the temp spec and put it in as an appendix as a temporary policy, interim policy. Easy.
Okay, great.
So I think the priorities for tomorrow, are we're going to revisit Purpose 1. It sounds like out of the public comment, we'll look at the split with the introductory clause for both. We need to pick up Recommendation 4 and 8. So 4 is the data elements to be collected by registrants, and 8 is redaction. 12 was also what you all had prioritized. 13 we have to come back to. I have a proposal for that. And then recommendation 1, I know, is important, and then the implementation. So it's pretty full. So we may have to reprioritize. Huh?
Yeah. We can bring lunch in.
Okay. Worst case scenario, we walk over, get our lunch, and then put it in a box and come back.
Can we start the day with a shot clock on interventions instead of reaching for it at 4:50 p.m.?
Start what?
Yeah.
Start with
a shot clock on interventions and
like maximum 2 minutes per person kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. So we're also getting feedback, which I know was in a lot of the threads, to have more limited on interventions that we try to really modify to maybe 2 minutes, and that was something that had gone around. I know a number of you had commented on. Yeah? Okay, 7:30 a.m., you can get your breakfast to go. 7:30. James, I'm going to come find you.
Oh, that was me.
Okay.
I thought that we get the plane, but that was all me.
Matt, I'm going to come get you.
You're on verge of making history, folks. You can do it. Look at all the stuff you've done. You've got this much to go. It's possible, but you got to go for it.
7:30,
we'll see you at 7:30.
2 minute interventions. Be ready to work hard, and you're going to work through lunch. Quick break for lunch, and we're going to work hard. Okay? Thank you all. Thank you so much. I know it's hard work. Have a great night.
Yeah.